And welcome back to RMU FC here on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Dante Verme flying solo today, but thankfully Brendan Alfieri of the men's soccer team has decided to come in for the day.
Thank you.
Brendan, how's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah? So are you ready for this? Because we this is something that's been in the works for like a week or two. Just to forever get in contact.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready to wing it and see what happens, absolutely.
That was great. It was great. The conversation before the show, Brendan's like, what are we going to do? It's like, well, let's just wing it and
see
something.
Where it goes.
Something, yeah, see where it goes.
As long as it makes you guys happy.
No, it'll be good. So, the show will be a little bit different from usual. We will go EPL and then just shoot the breeze about college soccer. Brendan's a transfer, for those of you who don't know, so be interesting to get his perspective on that. But first off, everybody's favorite freaking soccer league. This is how we start the show. We go straight into the Premier League, and I know you're a City fan, so...
Yeah, we had a little bit of a rough weekend, that's for certain.
Rough go for City. It's funny, because it seems like Palace does this every year, at least the last 2 years since they got pushed up.
Well, they always struggle with relegation in the beginning of the season, and then usually they have like a manager change in like January during the transfer windows, and then they shoot up to 11th place right now. And now they're fine. You know, they're like 10 points back from relegation zone, so they're fine. Alan Pardew is doing a great work with Crystal Palace.
And they're just finding ways to upset teams that are sitting in second place.
Finding ways to upset teams. It sucks because it's against my team, but...
Yeah, City falling at Palace. It just seems like that's that place that's really underrated to go play, and it's brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the City falls from second to fourth for the first time since October, and, you know, Mel Pellegrini is getting heat because they lost three of their last five. And they're not, no one's injured. You know, Aguero's healthy, Torre's healthy, David Silva's healthy. I think David Silva's been the best player for Man City, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the company. What's going on with company?
Dude, he's been nowhere.
Been nowhere. I mean, you come and play a great World Cup. You have a great last season, if not the best player. You're the captain of Man City, and that in itself is an honor. And then you go and make mistakes that, you know, you never would picture him making and cost goals.
Yeah.
You know, that first goal against, you know, City against Crystal Palace was a communication error between him and Di Michaelis. So I'm just worried about, you know, the whole team morale in general, because we need to bounce back. Because we're sitting fourth place, and we're struggling to even keep in the Champions League.
Yeah, especially considering what's coming on Sunday, the Manchester Derby, so.
The Manchester Derby is my holiday.
It's your holiday. And it's nice. It's not at 8 a.m. either. It's 11 a.m. I'll be up watching that one.
I will be up, and it's going to be a great game because United's in form. Mm-hmm. Usually, like, you know, the commentator said during this Crystal Palace City game that usually it's Man City's being the noisy neighbors, but now since Man City has won the title and they won the League Cup last year, Man United's the noisy neighbors. Now the roles have switched. So United are in favor right now because they're above City, and they're on form.
Yeah. That's all you can ask for. Speaking of another team in form, Arsenal's been on fire.
On fire. Olivier Giroud, the Frenchman,
yeah.
Man, he's been on fire.
They took Liverpool 4-1. Swansea took Hull 3-1. United took Villa. Everton, that's just the team. Everton's been that team the whole year. It's just seemed like they've been disappointing.
Usually, Everton's a 5th, 6th, 7th place team, but it looks like Southampton's replacing Everton. You know, because Southampton is, you know, they start off the year, you know, first couple months, second, third place, and then they're in seventh place right now. They're almost qualifying for Europa League.
Yeah, and
especially with how Tottenham's doing right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is going to come. Sooner or later, they drop an egg, and it's a big one, and they drop it at Burnley, 0-0. I mean, what else can you say about that?
Oh, absolutely. But you got an in-form striker right now.
Yeah.
Not only is Harry Kane in-form for Tottenham, but he's in-form for England as well.
Yeah. How about that for England? That's not bad on your debut, isn't it?
Because usually, like, you know, people like, you know, Henderson, Sterling, Welbeck, you know, they get to the big international stage and they just let the nerves get the best of them and they don't perform. But when it comes to Harry Kane, he knows how to deal with it. He knows how to put balls in the back of the net.
It's crazy. He's just 21.
And he's 21. And he's 21.
Yeah. Sunderland took care of Newcastle and then Palace and City. I think, you know, this weekend, the one to look forward to is the Derby.
The Derby.
It has to be.
It's actually pretty interesting because NBC is flying out all their commentators. You know,
really?
Rebecca Lowe, all of them to the City game because that's how big of a game it is.
Well, I mean, it's the biggest derby, you know, at least in England.
Oh, it's the biggest derby in England. You know, it's not arguably the world.
Yeah, I put it second, you know, the Madrid derbies. They're the Madrid derby or the El Clasico, but how about Madrid? Real, that was like, it just blows my mind that a professional team can lose 9-1 or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes to show, you know, the difference between La Liga and the Premier League. Because, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona are always number one and number two. They're always going to dominate teams in the relegation zone. You know, 9-1, absolutely. But when you have world-class players like Ronaldo, James Rodriguez, Gareth Bale, you know, working up top with Benzema, you're going to have goals that are going against players that their contracts are not even comparable to their prices.
Yeah. Well, it's unreal, and we'll cut that short. And for those of you who don't know, Brendan is a transfer. This is still, what, month six here?
Month six.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
So talk about how, I mean, where you came from. It was a D3 school, correct?
I came from Grove City College.
Okay. And talk about that process, because that must have been a pretty whirlwind to go from D3 to D1 within a matter of months.
Well, the month of May up at Grove City last year, I really was pushing towards making an MPSL or a PDL team to play on over the summer to polish my skills, and then go back to Grove City and to play just better and take what I've learned to there. So I ended up trying out for a bunch of teams and not making it. And instead of, you know, getting down and just stop trying, I just kept trying, and I finally got to Fort Pitt Regiment. They told me I could be on their practice squad. So I decided just to go to the practice squad and, you know, see how things would go. And actually one of the keepers got hurt, and he was out for the entire summer. So they ended up signing me as their third string. So as they signed me as their third string, I was like all hyped because I got a contract. You know, I worked hard for this. And so I didn't see any game time until halfway through the season. And I went in and played against Erie Admirals up in Edinburgh in front of all the youth kids. And, you know, had a great game, had a shutout, you know, definitely helped from the defense. But I guess I showed to the coaches that I was a good goalkeeper and I could handle pressure because it was conference play. It was the first game of conferences. So did that, and then they gave me another chance, and then I just kept going with it, kept keeping shutouts, and then they finally decided to put me in. You know, when they decided to put me in regional semifinal, against Minnesota, I came up with 13 saves and a shutout.
Jeez.
And that's when I told, you know, a couple of the Robin Morris players, I was like, hey, I feel like I should take my talents to a bigger level and see what happens. So I decided, you know, after just talking to Ben and Jewel and, you know, guys on the team from Robin Morris, that it would be a good idea to come here and try to see what would happen. You know, I know Joseph Kuda was a great goalie and he was here. And just to go toe-to-toe with him and see what happens, you know. And ended up talking to Coach Bill and got everything transferred and everything worked out really well. And now I'm here.
I remember very vividly the first game I was like, who's this Alfred? I remember I butchered your name the whole game because I sat back and watched the tape. I was like, Alfrey or something like that. And then I remember watching you make the penalty save. Which was, it was unreal. I was like, whoa, like, I don't think we've ever had a goalie like this here. And it seemed you just kind of fit in, like, right off the bat.
Yeah, I think having experience from the Fort Pitt definitely helped the transition and the adjustment to Division I soccer, absolutely. And I just think, like, you know, Coach Bill went off and took a chance and gave me the game, and, you know, he saw what happened, and it really worked out. And you know, some things, when it's meant to be and you're playing really well, you have a knack for, like, the penalty save. I knew where he was going.
Yeah.
I actually was kind of funny because I walked up to him because during the World Cup over the summer, I read that Tim Krul, during his penalties, he would yell to the player saying, hey, I know where you go. I researched you. So I did something like that. I went up to him and I was like, yo, I know where you go. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? So I was like, man, I'm really going to make a fool of myself or I'm going to, like, be the hero. So I ended up saving it. And they're like, yo, you told him where you were going and you went that way. That was brilliant. So
what was the, you know, you have this season under your belt now. What was the biggest, you know, transition from D3 soccer to Division I soccer, especially, you know, including the fact that we have the number one point scorer in the country here?
Having the number one point scorer is very nice. And I think just the biggest adjustment for me was the speed of play. You know, transitioning from, you know, catching balls on crosses in Division III level to punching them out, going through bodies, you know, and usually not coming out on top because of my strength level wasn't there. So over hard work and stuff, I plan to fix that for next season. And also just the level of play, it's 10 times higher.
Yeah.
And it's definitely to adjust, you know, you always got to be on your toes. Even as a keeper, if I don't face one shot, I'm talking to the defense, I'm organizing, you know, I'm trying to help out because I'm the quarterback. I see everything.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, trying to figure out the right way to say it. It's like the transition is the ball comes faster, the players are faster and stronger. And, you know, how is it getting to mesh with, you know, I think especially for goalkeepers in soccer, you have to really get on a good level with your defensemen, if anybody.
You got to know, especially as a goalie, you know, what kind of defenseman you have in front of you. Who's the fastest? Who's the tallest? Who's the best in the air? You know, if a ball is going to him in the air, he's going to get it. Or, you know, if one's going to skip it back, you know. Also, you know, with wing play, playing defense against wingers, you know, knowing our left and right back, knowing the speed, knowing if they get cut in, what seam's going to open up and stuff like that. So the more I got to play with the four backs and the more consistent the five defense was, the more I became comfortable with them, they became comfortable with me, even just passing the ball back, you know, just to keep the ball and, you know, relieve pressure. You know, they were more comfortable with me and passing the ball back because they knew I was good with my feet.
Yeah. Was there, like, a difference in terms of, like, the season length, like, you know, making sure you're ready every game between here and Grove City? I mean, obviously there had to be a big difference.
Yeah, there was a big difference, especially because we would play Fridays and Sundays. Usually in Division III level, you play Wednesdays and Saturdays. So you would have light practices usually because you usually have a game coming up. But for here, it's like we go really hard during the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then take light Thursday, and then we go play Friday and Sunday. So it would be crazy because if we lost Friday and I say I had a bad game or I was disappointed, I had a Saturday was my only day to just let it go, get over it, and then go into a clean mind for Sunday and put it all behind me. But in Division III level, you have 2 days to rest. You have 2 days to figure it out, and then, well, usually three. And, you know, you can go back and figure it out and, you know, study the next team. But here, it's like it's fast-paced.
Yeah, it just seems like it's like, all right, you lost. You kind of have to put that on the back burner because you got another game coming, you know, 25 hours or whatever it was afterwards. And, I mean, it's just really frustrating. And we've talked about this, watching this team and how good they are offensively, but it's just – you know, conference play, it just seems like it's been an issue the last couple of years.
Well, it's been a good spring season for us. We've not given up a goal yet, but we have not scored yet. So, but coming from out the fall season, you know, Nico scoring a lot of goals, and then other players backing him up, yeah, that was our strength. So it's good to have that, our strength now, like then, and then our strength now is defense. Because if you look at the stats, the team that allows them the least amount of goals usually ends up on top for the group before the playoffs even start, because playoffs are a tired new game. But in conference, you know, the standings and stuff, if you look at statistics, least amount of goals is like first and second, you know.
Yeah.
But if you score the most goals, you're not going to necessarily get there. So I think we know what we're working on, and we're doing well at it, and we're definitely setting ourselves up for next season. But we, you know, we said that last season too. So really just learning from our mistakes and doing it is what's going to be the key next season.
How big do you think it is to lose? It was Speedy. Speedy's leaving. Carl's leaving. I don't remember who else is leaving.
Chris Miller's
leaving. And he was really good on defense pretty much the whole year. He spent half the year in a cast, but he was pretty good.
He was good. We ended up losing Bruce, too.
Yeah.
But we ended up getting a transfer named Keen. He's very good, too. Speedy's going to be a big hit. He was a great captain. He led the park, controlled the game when it needed to be controlled, picked up players when players needed to pick it up. And then, you know, Chris Miller was great, strong on defense, struggled with some injuries, but Hunter fit in really well. Mm-hmm. He's playing really well this spring, so, you know, he'll be a good replacement for that. And then Jerry Meals is playing exceptionally well during the spring, so I think he'll be a good asset for G because G struggled with injuries and stuff like that. Bruce is going to be a big hit, but I think Keane's a perfect replacement for him. and Keane and Nico work really well. You know, Keane plays right under Nico, and they play really well together.
Yeah.
I think a little better than Bruce and Nico did, so that will definitely set us up well. So, and it all depends on the recruiting class, too.
Yeah. Are there, you know, aside from team goals, are there any personal goals you want to try and build on for this season compared to last season?
Personally, obviously you want to go, as a team you want to go farther. But personally, I would like to, allow a lot less goals than we did this year. I think just allowing myself to have some leeway because of my first Division I season. Definitely. And I think, right now my whole hot topic in my mind summer, is learning what Division I soccer was like and then applying it to the summer league, because summer league is just as important as the fall.
Mm.
Because actually the summer league is when scouts look at you more than they do in the fall, because that's when their heat of the season is. So right now it's definitely summer for me, and focusing on four-pit regiment with Coach Kowalski, and definitely going to be first string, so just hopefully playing well and see what happens.
I think it's going to be really interesting that you're going to get the perspective of Coach Dennison from the men's side, and then playing with Fort Pitt, you're going to get Coach Kowalski, who's also the women's coach here.
Yeah.
I think this is a really interesting dynamic. They're watching Coach Kowalski, is just watching him coach is amazing.
Yeah, he's a very good all-around team, good coach. Like, he'll help you out with goalkeepers, he'll help out with any position because he knows it, because he coached for the U.S. National. So that dynamic, and then coming from Bill, who's very good at team oriented, like, obviously we don't score goals for no reason. Like, his formation and his tactics up top look really well. So right now we're changing our focus to defense, but with Kowalski it's unbelievable. I do learn a lot from that guy, and definitely I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him, because he's the one that saw me first.
And if I remember correctly, you have and a couple of you playing for Fort Pitt together?
Yeah.
I think something like that would really help, especially going into the fall.
Right now, as it stands, is me, Matt Finnegan, and Hunter Barkham. So that's three of the defensemen that are going to most likely play for Fort Pitt, and if not start. So that chemistry that over the summer in a different league, a different format, different style of play will definitely set us up well for the fall.
All right, so let's move on from the Colonials. Let's talk about your road, just to get to college, because we've talked about it before, and it's pretty freaking cool, to say the least. So start wherever you please. Let's start,
You want high school sound?
Yeah, we can go to high school, man. You want to go to high school? We can do that.
I started playing for Central Catholic in my sophomore year, and I was playing for Arsenal. And my coach, Mark Taylor, was an English coach. And so we had an affiliation with West Ham. And so my sophomore year, I got invited down to Atlanta, Georgia, to the national camp. Kids from Bermuda, kids from Jamaica, kids from everywhere in the Caribbean and the United States to come here. And then the West Ham Academy coaches came down, ran the sessions, and they invited 7 or 8 kids out of the whole entire camp, hundreds of kids, to go over to England to try out for their academy team. And if you made their academy, which maybe was 1, possibly 2 if lucky, then you were there for a couple of years. So sophomore year, I did not make it. But junior year, I ended up getting the chance to go over there. And I got the chance. I was over there for 2 weeks, two-week trial with West Ham's academy team, with 10 other players from Australia. There's kids from Bermuda there. And honestly, that experience was so awesome. Our hotel was in Upton Park. Like, just the view of that was just astonishing.
That's got to be pretty surreal for, 16, so like junior in high school is like 16, 17.
I was 16, so I'm young for my age. So.
To go overseas and to go to a English Premier League team, that's got to be surreal.
Oh, it was surreal. It was awesome. Even meeting just the first team players at their training facilities was just a dream come true. Seeing how they, train, and seeing how we train here, and, some things mirror each other, but some things you want to adapt. So, meeting Robert Green, meeting those Demba Ba, those big-name West Ham players at the time, was just astonishing. And it even fueled my, dream to play professionally even more, because you were tasting it. You were living it for those 2 weeks.
I can assume the competition was, at practice was cutthroat, to say the least.
Oh, the competition was unbelievable. You know, even with the keepers, there was three keepers, you know, and two of them were the West Ham Academy keepers, and they just threw me in with them, and I had to blend in with them. But I ended up blending in with them really well, to the point where they wanted to bring me back when I was 18, because trying to get a work permit or your, you know, European visa while you're 17 is nearly impossible. I mean, even people like the big names like Brad Friedel, took him 6 years to get one. So they ended up inviting me back, which was awesome. So senior year of high school, decided to go to Grove City because I was banking on this chance in England, and I was just planning on moving there. So I ended up getting back to go to England. But this was more of a combine than more of just going to the West Ham Academy directly. There was different coaches there. West Ham was there, absolutely, because they were running it. But they invited different coaches to kind of sell us. We were West Ham property,
mm-hmm.
but they would bring teams like Liverpool, Tottenham, you know, all these other teams, and some lower teams like Doncaster or Watford, you know, those teams, to come look at us so that they could sell us. So I ended up going there, and the first day I played, it was 2 days, so I played absolutely out of my mind, you know, seeing all these big name coaches, you know, I was just motivated. So I ended up getting in talks with the Liverpool coach, and I have his business card with me still. I carry that thing around.
That's not going anywhere.
I'll frame that one day. So he gave me his business card and was like, hey, if you keep playing like this, you know, we'll hit you up, we'll bring you in July and bring you to training camp and see how you play, and then decide whether or not to sign you. So, and that was like with the reserves. So I was like, man, I was 18 at the time. I was like, man, I'm skipping all of that. So ended up, unfortunately, the next day breaking my finger, and ended up, if I ever wanted to play again, I wasn't allowed to play the last week and a half, 2 weeks that we were there. So it was just really unfortunate. You know, the Liverpool coach went out to me and was like, dude, this sucks, but this is football. You know, keep working hard, keep pushing it. And, you know, ended up not getting anything, obviously, because I only got to play one day. But it was hard because you would see players right in front of you getting signed. You see contracts just going. You see invitations, hey, come over with us. You know, right in front of me, my roommate even, you know, for the 2 weeks got an invite to come back. So it was just really close and touching distance, you know, at West Ham and then at this combine. So, I mean, it ended up not working out, but I think everything serves for a purpose.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things like, yeah, you know, sitting there watching the contracts is brutal, but at the same time, it's like putting gas on the fire, to say the least, to keep pushing to go back.
Yeah, it's pulling the fire, but it's very easy to give up. I mean, certainly I was pretty angry. I wanted to give up right there and there. So
what was the, I mean, you know, I've never been to England, and it's on my list. Like, what's like the difference? Like, not just culture, we'll start with culture-wise, but then let's go to like soccer culture-wise.
Well, when I was there in my junior year, the 2 weeks, we trained from 8 to noon, and then we got the rest of the day off. So what they did was, you know, we raised money to, you know, afford to go to these tourist places. So we got to tour Wembley Stadium, we got to tour Upton Park, we got to tour Stamford Bridge, and like see the locker rooms and see everything because we raised money for it. We got to go to the London Eye, you know, visit Big Ben, all that sort of, you know, top name stuff to do in London. And it was just a crazy experience. You know, we were rocking around. It was crazy because we were walking around in our West Ham gear.
Yeah.
Because, we were obviously there for that. And people would come up to us and be like, yo, who are you guys? And we're like, oh, we're trying out for West Ham Academy. They're like, all right, can we get a picture with you? I'm like, sure. So it was great. You just felt like just a glimpse into the pro life. It was awesome. And, you know, the difference there, soccer is their main sport. It's all people think about. You know, it's all people look forward to on the weekends. You know, they think about it at work. It gets them through their work day because they know Premier League is going to be on when they get home.
Yeah.
You know, so even their academy teams, you know, you get a lot of fans to come out because they're passionate about it. And so it was really cool just to see, you know, just see London in general, you know, just how big that city is. You know,
it's massive, isn't it?
Massive. I mean, we were on the London Eye, and as far as my eye could see, I could just see straight buildings. I was like, man, I miss trees.
What was over there, what was, like, the most surreal, like, moment of, like, I don't know, like, going to Stamford Bridge, or I don't know, running to Jose Mourinho, and you're like, whoa.
My...
like, all right, we gotta kick it back here a minute. Like, sit back and take this one in.
My surreal moment was when we got to tour Wembley Stadium, and we got to walk out with the music, Whoa. We got the walkout like with the music that they play.
Yeah.
So like you're just walking out and it's just us because there's obviously, you know, just our team. And we were walking out like we were playing on the Wembley pitch and just walking out and just visualizing one day being there and playing on that field for, you know, my country was just the most surreal because you just like, you just felt it. You know, it was in you. You saw it right before your eyes. You dreamed of it.
Yeah.
And just being there and playing that music in front and we walking out onto the pitch was brilliant. And I think what my most surreal moment was actually playing on Upton Park. We got to play on Upton Park field. It wasn't like an actual game because only the first team is there, but we got to practice on half of the field for an hour, and it was honestly the most surreal moment because you just imagining, you know, the fans all around the stadium just cheering your name, you know, just and everything that you've done in soccer worth it because you're standing right there.
I think it's like one of those things like you just you walk, like there's places like that here. Like I remember for me we covered RMU at UNC, we got to go watch Duke the night before.
Yeah.
And we hung out and we're like, all right, we're gonna go on the court in Camden. You walk on the court and you could just you don't know what it is, you just feel this energy and it's like a really good energy. And I'm pretty sure that's something you might have felt just getting on the pitch there at West Ham.
Oh, just getting on the pitch and talking to Sam Allardyce, the head coach. It was an overwhelming experience because, you know, you think of those moments, you know, when you're down, you know, you lose a game, you think of those moments and those are the moments that push you. You know, those are the moments that you remember for the rest of your life. And then when you actually get to where your dream comes true, you remember those moments that you had when you were a child because those will always be with you. And I think just being in Upton Park, having a room in Upton Park, talking to the head coaches, being treated like a professional athlete, it was a dream.
How was it like family wise? Like I'm assuming your parents were like, man, he's 16 overseas. They're like, this got to be weird.
Well, my mom my mom had to go, so she ended up coming for the first 2 days and realized that she couldn't see me because our practices were enclosed, obviously, because they don't want other teams filming our sessions and stuff. So not even our parents were allowed in. And so she realized quickly, like, okay, I'm not going to see him, but I know he got here safe, and I know that he's going to get back safe because I was going back with another family. So they ended up flying out early. But for my mom, it was like that week and a half when she wasn't there, she was like not with conversation with me at all because of obviously the phone and stuff like that. And I had no Wi-Fi, and we were always so busy. So it was tough for her. I think it was tougher for her the second time because when she heard that I broke my finger, and I, like, you know, through, because it was obviously a week later that I got to tell her because I haven't had no communication in England. So she was just shocked. Like, she just was like, oh, I'm not there for my son. And he's in England.
It's not like he's like 2 hours away. It's like it's a 6-hour flight plus whatever it is.
$900 flight. Probably more now.
Oh man, I can't imagine. So, you know, overseas is nice. What are you looking forward to? This is your first time before Pitt, isn't it?
This is my second time. Pitt. Yeah.
Okay. What are you looking forward to from, you know, that aspect?
What I'm really looking forward to, and it's kind of like a little selfish thing, is, you know, Ron Morris, obviously, you know, we have a good amount of fans that come out, you know, hopefully we want more. But before Pitt, you know, even though the away games, like we played in Detroit, there was 9,000 people there in that stadium. 9,000. It was a high school stadium, so I don't know how they got into that stadium. But, you know, just being in that atmosphere, it reminded me of my experience in England, like that coming true in America. So I'm really looking forward to the fan atmosphere, and we're trying to get at least 3,000 to come out to our games down in Upper St. Clair this summer. So just being in front of that atmosphere, it's awesome.
And speaking of that, obviously it means, you know, we could talk about this for 3 hours. And we've come pretty close.
Yeah.
The soccer in the U.S. is obviously getting bigger, you know, if not by the day, by like the minute, to say the least.
Oh, it's definitely getting bigger. And the thing is that more fans, if you look at the statistics, MLS is the second most attended league. Out of all everybody, NFL and NHL, the only league that's above us is the MLB, and they have
162
games a year. So that's obviously the reason why they have the number one. But MLS is bigger than the NFL and bigger than the NHL, so it's growing to the point where cities are, you know, Minnesota was the next team to, you know, say they're coming to the MLS in 2018. You know, I'm hoping that they put one in Pittsburgh. You know, they're just teams, you know, even this year, Orlando City, New York City. New York City, the first game for New York City when David Villa was playing for them, they had more people there in that Yankee Stadium than Yankees did in their entire season.
I think it was something like they had like 300 more people there than in Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera's last game.
Yeah.
Which is, it's unreal because Derek Jeter is like the Yankees.
It's the Yankees. Yeah, I mean, everyone, even rappers sing about his retirement now. So he's a very big figure. And just to have a soccer game, you know, that has 43,000 people there.
Yeah.
That's more than Upton Park holds. That's even more than Stamford Bridge holds. So it's grown a lot. It's just, you know, I'm just really glad that the MLS reached an agreement with the players. And now that players are getting at least more money and the minimum wage is higher, the demand for players and the, you know, the motivation is going to be there, because they want to earn their money. They're going to want to, you know, play in front of those crowds.
Yeah, I think what was really surreal is watching Orlando's first game. This is like 62,000 people showed up, and they sold out the Citrus Bowl. It was unreal. Like, Kaká, I mean, how poetic Kaká scored. Like, even though it was a tie. Like, for him to score in the 90-something minute.
I would want to be in that stadium. I would want to experience that, you know, for sure. But to be playing in that and experience that, you couldn't even imagine it. You know, you hear of players that struggle with anxiety issues, you know, because they're playing in front of so many people, it's overwhelming. It's awesome.
Is there, like, any goalkeeper you try and model your game or style after?
The goalkeeper coach in England said I really remind him of Iker Casillas.
Okay.
So ever since then, I've been, you know, modeling him, buying his jerseys, trying to get into his feel, you know. But he's like me. He's 6 foot, not that big, but he's got hops. You know, he can be a 6'4" goalie. One of the best keepers, you know, of a couple last years. I mean, obviously Manuel Neuer took the crown now, but you know, Iker Casillas has been Real Madrid since the 1990s.
He started there when he was like 16. Like, he has like A team starts like 16 or 17, which is unreal.
And he's been 6 foot since 16 or 17. So it's not like he's like grown or anything. So just absolutely, that he'd be the one.
I think it's funny how like soccer teams can have so much turnover in terms of like players. Like Madrid's such a great example. Like, you know, David Beckham went through, Zidane, you know. I think it was Ronaldo went through, both Ronaldos, correct?
Both went through the Madrid system?
Yeah, or like at least played at the team at some point.
Ronaldo played for Sporting Lisbon.
Yeah.
Cristiano did.
Yeah, but it's like they just turn over players, but the goalkeeper always stays.
Always stays.
Always. Like you look at like always. Casillas or Buffon.
And usually the captain is the goalkeeper because he's been there 15, 20 years. It's crazy.
Is there any city in the U.S., like, in particular that you would like to play in? I mean, obviously, there's, you know, number one probably be Seattle for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Seattle atmosphere. It probably won't be my first place. I would want to go where the team, where I see the most growth in the team. I see the most growth in fans. Obviously, if I had to choose right now, I'd go to New York City because they're affiliated with Man City.
Yeah.
And their atmosphere is just, it's one of a kind. So I would pick New York City. Even though I don't like city life, I would definitely take New York City.
Yeah, city life's like, you need space a little bit.
I need space, absolutely. But if you're a professional athlete in New York City, you can live in Long Island, you know what I mean? So I would definitely choose that because, you know, that's the closest thing to Manchester City. It's right there. It's right in New York City.
It's crazy, and you can see it now. And it's really nice to see that the European teams are starting to invest in soccer here, and you just see it growing exponentially. I mean, the friendlies that are coming in too are unreal. I know, like, back home in DC, for like a week, everyone was infatuated with Messi.
Yep.
Like 2 weeks ago or whatever it was when they were in town.
Yep.
And then, you know, whenever Ronaldo's here, everyone has a cow.
Everyone's like, I gotta go travel to see Ronaldo. I mean, I went to Heinz Field to see Manchester City play AC Milan. And that, I mean, obviously, to see my team play.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just seeing the atmosphere of the crowd, like, everyone was talking about it. You saw people wearing all their favorite soccer gear. So it brings a community out, for sure. And that's why it's growing so much, is because big-name European teams like Manchester United, you know, Liverpool's actually owned by an American person. Like, you know, they're starting to contribute back to America and making America grow, so that to the point where when players get old, like Kaká, like David Villa, like David Beckham, like, so those big name players are coming to play for us, and they're fueling the fire for our soccer programs to grow. And you know, you see big names like Julian Green, Aaron Johansson, with deals between Germany or, you know, Poland and the United States, they're choosing the United States citizenship over that, you know, because they see how it's growing here. And it's just great. It's a great direction that soccer in America is going.
I'm assuming, like, on your list of, like, long-term goals, it's like be U.S. be goalkeeper for the national team and play in a World Cup.
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's a dream. I mean, that's a dream for every soccer player, is to represent their country, because it's, you feel like you're giving back to it, and you feel like you're using your talents to, you know, contribute to your country, and you're representing your country. You know, Tim Howard at the World Cup last summer, you know, he was amazing, and you know, just to see how he was treated when he came back was just awesome, because everyone was like, "Yo, you're a hero," you know, making 18 saves against Belgium. You have to be really good to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I would love to play for the U.S. national team. And I think the World Cup is a different atmosphere in itself,
too. Yeah, you know, it's really weird, because it just seemed like it was such, like, a U.S. story for that national team. Was everybody doubted them.
Everybody
doubted
them. Even
I doubted them. I sat there, I was like, I remember I saw the draw, and I saw Germany come in last. I was like, oh, man, you know, if we get lucky, like we need to, what happened, what the way I say is, like, we need to win Ghana and take two out of Portugal and Germany, we'll get through. And you know, thankfully they did.
Well, the thing is, we, you know, tying Portugal and beating them for a while, you know, we had, I mean, people were going nuts about that, you know, just beating somebody, and actually, like, even doing well against Germany for a little bit, what we did, you know, it was astonishing to see. You know, how it just shows how we're growing, because our talent that is on the U.S. men's national team is comparing to talent in Germany, England, Portugal, Italy, all those big name countries. We're starting to get up there, we're starting to make a name for ourselves.
Yeah, I'm joined by RMU goalkeeper Brandon Alfieri here on RMU FC. Is there any? Let's see, like, pick your top three if you have a top three for this. Top three international stadiums that you'd want to play in.
International stadiums.
I know that's a big load.
I would love to play in the Rio de Janeiro stadium.
Mm-hmm. Or the Maracanã.
The Maracanã. Wembley Stadium obviously is up there, just because of the tenacity around it.
Yeah.
90,000 stadium. And then, you know, the last country I would want to play in is Germany. You know, in the Allianz Arena where Germany plays. I hear that's an arena of out of space, because that's how awesome it is. So, yeah, those would be the top three for me.
I think it's interesting, because my number one was where BVB plays.
Really?
Like not to play, like to go sit and watch, or, you know, go announce.
Did you see the BVB, like, fans, like, putting up those signs?
Oh, my God. Like, I don't know how you don't sit there if you're the other team and just wet your pants.
Oh,
like, that's terrifying.
Oh, terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
And the one that always freaks me out is the one where it's like some guy with this big Joker chin, and he's got these binoculars, and he's staring you square in the face, and you're just like, I'm like, how do you not, like, wet yourself looking at that and have 85,000 or whatever it is just freaking out?
Intimidated by that. Even though BVB has been struggling, but they're back up now. Yeah, but it's just being in front of that atmosphere, you know, even, you know, the World Cup in South Africa. Playing at Johannesburg, seeing how soccer in a World Cup can unite a nation like it did, that would be an awesome experience, because, you know, you can see the unity that soccer brings.
Yeah, we're getting really lucky the next 2 years. We have the Women's World Cup is up in Canada. Then we have
the Euros.
We have the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
And we have Copa America. And the next year, Copa America this summer, and then Copa America Central coming to the U.S. the year after that,
which would be interesting.
Yeah, it's really nice seeing all these tournaments coming to the U.S.
I mean, the Women's World Cup's right in Canada.
Yeah, it's like a stone's throw away. What do you think of that? You know, I know most of the stadiums, I think, are going to play on turf. Yay or nay from you?
I am a nay for that. I am a nay. I think it, playing on England grass, you never want to go back.
Okay.
It makes turf look like It's just terrible. Like, I don't like turf because it just, as a goalkeeper, you know, it really messes with your feet and your, you know, and kicking the ball is a lot harder on turf because you don't have anything to dig into, or to get underneath the ball is a lot harder. So playing on grass, it just makes the game more natural to me.
Turf, I always thought it's like, it makes the ball go too fast.
On turf, when it's wet, it goes way too fast.
Yeah.
On grass, you can actually, like, it's going to bounce naturally. It's going to be able to control better. Because in England, it always rains. So if anyone has an excuse to have turf fields, it's England, because it's always raining there. When I was there, it was raining half the time. So, but just to see how the ball bounces and how the ball is played, and it's still the same even when it doesn't rain, because they take care of that grass. That's what I wish we would do here more. But, you know, obviously we're about, you know, keeping it easier on us, so we just buy the turf.
Yeah. You see Army ever going to turf?
No.
No.
I hate it. No, there's no way they're going to turf.
How many, you remember, if you can recall, how many times you guys play on turf? I think there was at least one. Was it Duquesne game?
Oh, we played Duquesne on turf. We played Sacred Heart on turf, you know, and then most of our away games in the conference were on turf, except Bryant. That wasn't on turf.
Yeah. I was going to ask, at the North Athletic Complex, it gets, you know, if it's the right time of day, the sun is like just, the sun is right there. If it's the goalie to your left, if you're looking at the field left to right, it's, I mean, that
you
has
want,
to be a nightmare.
You know what side you want, because that sun, if it's not covered, it's going to be in your eyes. And that's why some of the goals that went in were because our defenders couldn't even see the ball.
Yeah.
So it affects you. So that coin toss is very important.
That coin toss is important for reasons that more than you know.
More than you know, because it contributes to the game.
So are there any teams you're looking forward to in particular? Now you got a year under your belt. You played everybody in the conference. Is there anybody in particular you're looking forward to playing?
I'm really looking forward to playing to Bryant. I really think we owe them one, if more than anybody else. I think if we would have won that game last year in overtime, it would have been a different story for our conference play. I mean, we ended up in fifth place. I think just starting off the conference against Bryant here and beating them, it's going to be huge.
Any sneak peek into any big non-conference games this year at all? Or?
We were playing a tournament against Bowling Green and Marshall.
Ooh.
So that'll be big. I mean, our big game last year, James Madison, and we took it to them at their place.
Yeah. And Madison, being from down there, is known for their soccer program being very good.
And they tied Penn State. They did really well against UVA. They beat big name teams. They went to the NCAA tournament. It's actually kind of funny because the three teams that we played in the NCAA tournament, we've either tied or beat them. But when it comes to conference play,
it's just weird.
We can't find the score.
As in the story, like the last 2 years, it's weird because it's like the team's so full of talent, and it's just conference play just brings out.
It's a whole
something
new
else. Game. Yeah,
it's a whole new ball. We can go to James Madison and play in front of their 1,000 fans and beat them. And then we'll go to, you know, we'll go to Bryant, or we'll go to LIU Brooklyn. We'll come here and we'll lose 1-0, you know, to teams that would lose 4 or 5-0 to James Madison. So just, I think what we need to do next year is take it one game at a time. You know, look at every game the same, the entire season, so that we know that we don't get nervous, extra nervous because of conference play.
All right, Brendan, what did you think?
That was awesome.
That was awesome. Yeah.
I was worried. I was like, man, what am I going to say? What am I going to talk about? But, you know, when soccer's a part of your life for so long, it just comes out.
Well, thank you so much for joining me here today, Brendan. If any time you want to come back,
absolutely.
You're more than welcome to. That'll do it for our show this week. I want to thank Brendan for coming. Any final words? Anything?
No, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely, brother. That'll do it for RMU FC this week. We'll come back next week. And there's the derby.
Oh yeah.
What's your prediction for the derby?
I want City to win. I think City's renewal game is Saturday.
Have they ever? When was the last time? It just be recently they won at Trafford, hasn't it?
They won 6-1 at Trafford.
Yeah.
Remember that. And then they won 3-2 with Aguero. They won 2-1 with Aguero scoring 2 goals last year.
Okay. Last
2 years we've been fine at Old Trafford.
And third year's a charm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, start the title run. That'll do it for us here. RMUFC, Dante Vermey, Brendan Alfieri, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with more soccer. Until then, take it easy.